Okay. Take two.
Take two.
Welcome to the inaugural episode of Another Take. My name is Anthony, and today I'm joined by Sam.
Hello, I'm Sam.
Yes. this week we'll be covering the 2011 film, The Tree of Life. Before we get to that, though, Sam, what have you been up to?
I've pretty much just got ducklings living in my living room right now. So if you hear any squeaks in the background, that's what that is. Yeah, not really too much. Just work and hanging out with some ducklings. We're raising three to put out. We have three outside already.
Okay. So when they're ducklings, they don't spend any time outside?
No, we've been putting them outside some lately. But at first, they don't at all. They can't, like, regulate their body temperature super well. And they can't get wet because they don't have, like, the oils and the down and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But last few days we've been able to take them out some. But yeah, they poop a lot, so that's pretty much been my life.
Oh, so it's just it's like the same process with chickens.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yes. Exactly. Yes, yeah. Because you have chickens.
Yes, I've gone through the chick breeding, or I guess the chick rearing process, which is crazy.
Yeah, it's fun, but yeah, you just have to like. They're not very hardy at that point, so you just have to make sure they don't die.
Yeah, I'm just a nervous wreck when it comes to that. And then, because I remember Liz had, you know, the chicks in the basement with the heat lamp and all that jazz. And she's just scooping them up, and I was like, what? These things are like 2 inches tall. What are you doing?
Yeah, you're going to kill them. I know, it is so weird, because it's just like, I mean, you could.
Yeah.
Not that I'd want to, it's just, you know, you have so much power.
I would absolutely trip. I'd be standing still, holding a chick, and then all of a sudden trip.
Yeah.
Just positive it will happen.
But yeah, what have you been doing? What have you been up to lately?
Oh, man, just, I've been rearing you know, she's a little bit larger than a duckling, but I've been rearing my daughter, so... trying to do her on the good stuff. Liz and I saw on Saturday, we went to go see 28 Years Later.
Oh, how was that? I do want to see that.
Oh my God. I thought it was incredible.
Yeah, I heard great reviews from it, that it was like different enough from like the first two where it was mm-hmm. like, you didn't feel like they were rehashing stuff. So like, I don't know. I like to go in cold. So I didn't read too much about it, but I am very encouraged, especially if you have, like, a good opinion of it.
Yeah. Well, I might not be the target demographic because I have not seen any of the other 28 time frame later movies. So I haven't seen 28 Days or 28 Weeks.
I don't remember too much about Weeks, honestly. I think I only saw that once, but, like, 28 Days later, like, you know, I got it on DVD at Best Buy back in the day and, like, watched that all the time. It's such a good movie.
Yeah, like, Liz actually grew up with it. She called it a dorm room movie.
Yeah, that is very accurate.
She said, she was like, oh, yeah, back in college, this was always on in dorm rooms.
Yeah, no, that's, I can vouch for that. That was definitely heavy on the rotation.
But, no, I'm trying to think. I was 9 when it came out, so I didn't come anywhere close to that movie.
Oh, what year did that come out, then?
Didn't it come out in 2000? Or did it? Oh, no, it came out in 2003, right?
Oh, 2002, apparently.
2002?
So, yeah, I was only, like, 11, but, like... Man, I remember being a teenager and, like, watching that. I didn't realize it was that old.
Yeah. No, so I was 11 as well when it came out.
Dang, yeah. See, I thought it was just like I had missed it in the theaters because I was just like got it on DVD and just thought it was amazing. Dang, I thought that came out much later in my life, but now that it has some staying power, I'll say that.
But again, I can't recommend the new one enough.
Nice.
I just thought it was wild. Like, Danny Boyle is such a... God, he's such a weird filmmaker.
What all has he done besides those? I'm really bad with remembering filmmakers, honestly.
Oh, that's okay. This filmography is insane. So he did, like, a crime film called Shallow Grave. He did Trainspotting, both Trainspotting films. Sunshine, did you ever see the sci-fi film with like Chris Evans?
No, I didn't see that. I think you had recommended that to me at one point, but I haven't seen that.
And then he also did, well, I don't know how highly I can recommend it. I have not seen it in like 15 years. I don't really remember that much of it. But then he did like 127 Hours.
I do remember that. That's a good movie.
Steve Jobs with Michael Fassbender.
I don't really go in for the biopics, if I'm being honest, though.
Oh, that's fair. But for me, Steve Jobs is incredible because it's way different than most other biopics. It does even, like, approach, like, because, you know, traditionally it's like a cradle to a grave type movie.
Right, yeah.
No, Steve Jobs is three extremely stressful 24-hour periods in his life. And it's like split into three acts, and each one is a different, it's the 24 hours leading up to a presentation or like a product reveal.
Oh yeah. Like one of those big like announcement things when they're in.
Yeah.
Where he's like this year on it's stage. The iPod or whatever. Mm-hmm.
It goes, wouldn't it be great to have all of music in your pocket?
Yeah.
Yeah, so if I remember at the... Jeez, I can't remember which three... I think it ends on the iPod. Because it starts on the very first, like, iMac or something.
Oh, okay.
The Lisa or something. Jeez, I don't remember which ones. But it's an Aaron Sorkin screenplay. And it's so good. Like... So it's nothing like the traditional biopics. Then he did like a kids movie called Millions. Have you heard about
no,
this?
I haven't heard of that either. This is quite the range that we're getting right here.
Oh, Danny Boyle is wild. So I haven't seen Millions, but from my understanding, it's about a kid in the UK who finds a like duffel bag that's been thrown off of a train, and the duffel bag has millions of dollars in it.
Oh, the dream, but the also dream. The nightmare.
And then he also did that movie from 2019, I want to say, called Yesterday, where
that's the Beatles thing.
Yeah. Like, you cannot pin this man down.
Not at all. Doggone.
I really think he's like almost kind of like the British version of like Steven Soderbergh, where
I could see that from that spread right there.
Like, and he's like formerly inventive too, where he's just like, I'm gonna try and film, because he with Steve Jobs he films it on three different formats. So like the first act of Steve Jobs is filmed, I want to say, on like 16mm, and then it progressively gets like better quality as the movie progresses.
Interesting. It would have been cool if he ended it on like filming on an iPhone, you know?
Oh my God.
Well, if that's they what went he did that far.
He eventually did that for 28 years later. It's filmed on an iPhone. Yeah. Dang.
Okay. We just came full circle. So
yeah.
Mission accomplished.
Well, are you ready to talk about today's big episode or big movie?
Yes, definitely.
Oh my God, let's get to it. The Tree of Life, 2011, directed by Terrence Malick. So this was my suggestion for this episode. And I have to ask you, what is your relationship to both Tree of Life and Terrence Malick?
So this is my third Terrence Malick movie. I'd seen Days of Heaven, which was great, and then Badlands, which I absolutely loved. And this was the first time I've seen Tree of Life. And, like, in some ways, I think it was similar to both of those movies, but, like, really not in, like, a few fundamental ways. But I was pretty blown away. Like, I really did not know what to expect. Because when you Google it and, like, try to get the blurb, it's like, what does it say? Drama/sci-fi. And it's like, yeah, that doesn't even really do it justice at all.
And then, like, you read, like, maybe a log line for the movie, and it's like, oh, yeah, this movie is also about a family in Texas, deals with grief, and also just the universe, you know?
Yeah, and, like, that's kind of where I stopped. So I was like, oh, so it might be sort of like a transcendental, I don't know, like, interstellar thing or something, but in a very Terrence Malick way. But that also is completely inaccurate, but I did love it, though.
That's awesome. Yeah, because it's so wild to think of jumping from Days of Heaven to Tree of Life, because you can really see his progression with, I mean, there's like a 20-year break between Days of Heaven and, God, I want to say 1998 is when Thin Red Line came out.
Okay, yeah.
But you didn't see
it. I hadn't seen that either.
Oh, that's, again, I think his first five films are incredible. In order of Badlands, Days of Heaven, Thin Red Line, The New World, and The Tree of Life. And then Tree of Life was the first one I had ever seen.
Oh, that was your first. That's,
yeah.
I kind of knew, in a way, I was going to be getting into some, like, sort of meditative, a little slow, but not in a bad way kind of thing. Like, I couldn't imagine that being my first, you know. That's pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah, it was, because I really didn't know what to expect from Tree of Life. It was a case that I remember I was like, geez, I must have been like 20 or 19 when it came out. And of course, you know, when you first start really getting into movies, or like really start wanting to explore more, I don't know about other people, but for me, Roger Ebert was the guy. So when I saw Tree of Life come out and Roger Ebert was like, oh yeah, 4 stars, easy, this is a masterpiece, I was like, okay, well, I gotta go see that then.
That's interesting you came in it like by way of critic like that. Like, I don't know, I feel like that's a great way to like sort of start your relationship with films. I think mine was just sort of like, oh, that sounds cool, I'm gonna watch that. You know what I mean?
Oh, I think that's what it was like. Just like in middle school, it was all about just whatever I could get my hands on that even remotely interested me. And then in high school, it was like, ooh. Oh geez, wish I could cut that burp.
No, leave it in. No, editor, so like, keep that in.
Oh, shit. I'm the editor. but, no, so in high school, it's like what friends are recommending to you and what you're reading about online and stuff.
Oh, yeah, definitely like with internet lists and stuff like that. Like that really got me in there, too.
Oh, my God, so many lists. Plus, like, it was also just a thing of... once you realize that, like, because, you know, I'm not watching Tarantino in middle school.
Yeah.
But, like, once you start watching Tarantino and you find out that he's referencing other films.
Yes, dude. Oh, my gosh. That was 100% for me, too, because I saw one of the first movies that I, like, bought and just really wanted to see because I hadn't seen it anywhere else was Reservoir Dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, it was just sort of, yeah, it was going down that tree of just like all of his references. Okay, now Pulp Fiction. All right, now Kill Bill. And like what are all the, like, all these, those old Japanese revenge movies and everything else, you know?
Yeah. And then, like, oh, so you mean this is a reference to, like, John Ford? Like, I guess I gotta find out who this guy is.
Yeah.
And, no, so then it's just, yeah, so in the heist was, like, that branching tree. And then after that, for, like, new, for me, it was, like, for new stuff, if, like, new stuff was coming out, I always checked with Roger Ebert. I gotta find out what my guy says.
That's a great story. He's like your guide, you know?
Yeah.
With his lantern, just like, oh, take this path over here.
And then I think it's when you, like, fully mature in the mid-20s or something, when you realize, oh, wow, sometimes Roger Ebert is wrong. And nobody's going to have the exact same taste as you. No one's going to be like, oh, yes, if I say this is a four-star movie, then you'll enjoy this movie, too.
Yeah, then you will, too. I don't know, it's just like, because, like, for me, it was sort of like, I don't know, it's just kind of like what you said earlier about, like, I was just always about, like, oh, what sounds interesting to me? And, you know, and of course, you know, now with the internet and streaming, it's pretty easy to find a bunch of stuff that might be interesting. But I remember, like, I would go to Best Buy and buy DVDs on sale. Like, that's how I got Reservoir Dogs. Apocalypse Now was one of the first ones there, just blind watching them, and then you know, getting on the internet and researching them, and kind of doing what you were talking about, is like going through just like all the things that were referenced in those films, and then all the films that came after that referenced them, and, you know, for better or worse, you know.
No, I 100% agree, because yeah, like, maybe I, like, simplified it too much, but, like, I 100% went through the, oh, Blockbuster has these movies on sale.
Yeah.
Like, they're trying to offload these DVDs, and, like, and you just scoop them up, and it's just, because you don't have that, like, the buffet options of streaming back then.
Yeah.
So, like, if you scoop up this movie for $3... great, it gives you something to watch on Thursday night.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's awful or great, or if you've ever heard of it, or if you've never heard of it. It's just like, you look at the cover and you're like, oh yeah, Billy Bob Thornton. I like that guy. I'm sold.
Yeah, I'll watch that. Sling Bling. And also, we can't talk about rentals without talking about, like, how, like, spoiled we were with a local place that I'm sure you went to. We've probably talked about this before, but Wild and Woolly.
I went there one time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was just one of those things where I lived down in Shively, so it was a pretty far drive from me. Oh,
yeah, definitely. See, I was fortunate that my dad, like, turned me on to that pretty early in life, and, like, he would always get, like, Mystery Science Theaters from Wild and Woolly, like, I think even on VHS, and I watched them as a kid, and then I got older, and it was one of the first places I drove when I, like, had a car. I lived in close to Shot, but not quite out that far, but I kind of already had an awareness, because, yeah, that's not really something that is definitely part of a different part of town's culture, you know, as opposed to Shire. But anyway, sorry, I could talk about that for days.
Oh, no. We never really rented movies in our family, except from the Redbox. It was like, we tore, when Redboxes came around, we tore those suckers up.
See, I didn't really take advantage of those too much, honestly.
Oh.
But they were everywhere for a while.
That was convenience. And then, it was one of those things where, like, I don't know if you know this, but you could search online as to what movies would be at which red boxes.
Oh, no way. Okay.
Yeah.
If I had known that, I think I definitely would have. That's some insider information right there.
Oh, yeah. When we knew a movie would come out on DVD and hit up the red box, it was one of those cases where my mom was Friday night looking up red box locations, being like, was in stock here, is in stock there. Oh, it's over here. Anthony's in the car. We're going to it.
It was just the McDonald's at Dixie Highway and East Pages. You know, we got to go there.
We got to go there. And I was, you know, of course I was like, yeah, I want to go see a new movie.
Dang, that's awesome. Cause that's like a really like, it's like a journey, you know, it's an adventure. You know, you and your family just hunting down the red boxes. That's awesome.
Oh, it's definitely, and it's always been that way for me too. Cause, the kind of like, I feel like that was really big when I was in high school. And then, in middle school, it was a different variation of that where, my mom throughout our childhood had two VCRs, and so she would rent a movie from Blockbuster on VHS. She would pop it into one VCR, and while she's watching the movie, she would use the other VCR to record it.
Dang. Yeah. She's an early buccaneer out there pirating those movies.
she pirated tons. So,
this is a work of fiction, by the way. She never actually did these things.
Yeah. Statute of limitations, I'm sure. You can't come after her. Don't even try.
Don't even try.
No, so these little VHS tapes would have three movies to a tape. And I remember being in middle school, and I started getting like really into movies. And I started getting into, I hate to admit it, staying up past my bedtime, waiting until my family fell asleep so I could sneak down to the basement where these tapes were held, and I would grab a tape. You remember, all they had were titles on the side.
Yeah.
So I would grab a tape, go upstairs, and pop them in. And I watched so many movies that were not appropriate for me. And so many movies that just blew my mind. Like, this was so wow. I actually remember the tape that had Raising Arizona on it. And I remember being in middle school, like, I want to say seventh grade.
And that's not the worst one to watch at that age, but, like, I don't know if I would have known how to take that movie in seven. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think I had the sort of cultural knowledge to understand what was happening or to even like it. You know what I mean? Like,
I definitely knew I liked it. I did not understand that it was a critique of Reaganism at the time. That kind of flew over my head. But no, like, it seared itself into my head. Like, just imprinted itself onto my eyeballs after I saw that late. You know, we're talking, you know, it's like midnight. I'm sneaking downstairs. I'm putting on this tape.
And all of a sudden, Raising Arizona.
Raising Arizona comes up. You understand, like, when you hear that voice be like, but insides were a rocky place for my seed to find no perch. Yeah. I was like, this is
salacious.
This is unlike anything I've ever seen. It, you know, in middle school, all they want to do is just feed you fucking ants and Shrek.
Yeah, which I loved. See, I think this is sort of where we diverge a little bit in our film history experience, because, like, in middle school, actually, I went to school in PRP, very close to Shively, where you grew up. So one of the first movies I remember seeing on my own with friends at the good old Dixie Dozen. It may have not been one of the first, but, like, I was at an age where it was like, you know, oh, I'm going to go hang out at the movie theater. Mm-hmm. But it was the opening night for Larry the Cable Guy Health Inspector.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, like, that's what that's sort of at the time, that's what my friends at that point in my life were watching, stuff like that. And I just remember, like, it was fun, but, like, I can't say I've revisited, though maybe we'll do that for our next episode, but we'll see.
We'll see. Okay, so that wasn't your suggestion?
You know what? It is. Officially, it is my suggestion.
No. I mean,
it wasn't mine. At the time
that you saw it.
Yeah, everyone's like, oh, it's Larry the Cable Guy. Because it's, I mean, you know, that end of town. That's, I grew up around that end, too. It's very.
You could not state that, man.
Yeah.
It seemed like you walked into the gas station and you were going to hear Get Her Done at least three times. Yeah,
ready to get her done. Good old South End.
No, I, too, was also dragged to some interesting choices. I don't know if this tops it or not, but my cousin dragged me to go see the Wayan Brothers comedy, Little Man. Have you seen this?
No. Though I think I can imagine it. Was this like early 2000s, I guess?
I want to say that's the case. It's where one of the Wayan Brothers plays, I don't know how to like put this politically correct, but a little person.
I think that's it. We can cut this part out, but
but yeah, they super, if I remember right, they superimpose his head onto the actor's body.
I think I remember seeing like commercials for that, because like I have a very vivid picture of that, and it didn't look good.
It was awful. Just the plot synopsis alone, where he has to pretend he's a jewel thief who has to pretend to be a baby in order to retrieve a jewel that he has stashed in a family home.
Tale as old as time.
Of course. I believe it's based on Henry V. But but you know what? Let's circle back.
We should just have like a nostalgia episode at some point, because we're so good at that.
We're too good. I don't know if people have 3 hours to spare. I actually remember the first time I saw Tree of Life. I saw it at the Baxter, and it's one of the few movies. God, I think it's one of the few movies I've seen multiple times in theaters. And the weekend I saw it was even crazier, because I saw it Saturday afternoon, and immediately upon leaving the theater, I was like, my mind was fucking blown. I immediately pulled out my little brick Nokia phone, and I call up our friend Nick, and I'm like, Nick, what are you doing tomorrow? And he's like, nothing. And I was like, gotta go see this movie, Tree of Life. And he was like, okay. You know, like, that okay you say as in, like, okay.
Like, you're my maybe. Friend, so yeah, I'll go see it, maybe.
Well, no, it's like that okay you give, be like, okay, yeah, sure. And then, you know, I'm not really going to. And then I was like, no. Like, you and me are gonna go see it tomorrow. And he was like, oh, okay. Like, I just, this really is happening. So then literally within 24 hours, me and Nick and Nick's dad went to go see it. And, well, it's one of the very few movies I've seen twice in theaters. And not only that, but the first time I went to go see it on Saturday, this was back when the movie theater still had, you know, those old-fashioned seats where when you stood up, you did hear the bottom of the seat flip back up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I remember the ones at Baxter specifically.
Oh, yeah. They would go like, thump, 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 thump. And I remember watching Tree of Life, and, like, there's all those things where, like, you know, as you're filtering into the theater, I can't help it. I like to look around, see who else I'm sharing the space with. And it's a lot of, like, older folks. And so I was like, throughout the movie, I kept hearing these like thump, 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 thump. And these people have no bladders. Like, they have got to work on that. And then the next day, we went to go see it. I'm sitting there watching it again, and I'm just like gobsmacked. I'm like, this is so amazing. And I keep hearing that thump, 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 thump. And I'm like, wow, again, people just can't handle.
There's something in the water around here.
Like, just that's why you don't buy like large beverages for long movies.
Yeah, and, this comes in at like just over 2 hours, like 2:15 or something like that. I think
something close to that. And so movie's over. We go into the lobby. We start talking about the movie, and I think Nick and Nick's dad are discussing something unrelated to the movie, and I start to eavesdrop on a bunch of other conversations, and everybody in there is talking about how they left halfway through.
Wow. You know, one thing I did read about after I watched it earlier was I think at the original filming, it got like tons of applause and boos all at the same time.
Oh yeah.
Like it seemed like it's been pretty divisive. And I was actually, I read a little excerpt of an interview with Sean Penn, who is in the movie, where he loved the screenplay, but I think he put it like he couldn't find the emotion in what was on the screen. And said something along the lines of, like, people who can sort of identify with the movie or sort of see themselves in it love it, but, like, a lot of people just don't. So, like, that's funny that you had that, like, in real time, you know? You had that experience.
And I totally did that, too, because it's one of those wild things where seeing it as a young man, I couldn't help but, like, see myself as that kid.
Oh, 100%.
As young Jack. Like, especially when I had a domineering and stern father. And, oh my God, the scene where when the kid accidentally slams the door when running out the house.
Yeah, and has to close it softly, like, 50 times.
And count it out loud while his dad just sits there and watches him. I was like, oh my God, that's my childhood. And then the fact that they paired that with, as well, I don't know if you noticed this detail, but like, I'd say maybe like 10 minutes later in the movie, because, you know, the scenes are kind of like grouped by like theme.
Right, right. And, yeah, this is a very non-linear movie in most ways.
It takes probably some of the biggest time jumps, I'd say, when it jumps from, I think, present day to the birth of the universe.
Yes, exactly. That's what I was,
But yeah, like 10 minutes after the door slamming scene, you then have a scene where they show Brad Pitt as the dad, and they kind of focus on kind of why he's like this. But during one of these sequences, he's running out to go play poker, and he slams that fucking
thing. Oh, that, I did not notice that, but like some of the quotes. I wrote down a lot of quotes for this movie, but in the narration, isn't his name Jack the son?
Yeah,
they don't really speak people's names a lot in this movie. So like,
I'm pretty sure their credit, like Sean Penn is the only character with a name.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I didn't notice that either. But sort of going along with yours, there is, he says that in some of the narration, like, I think he just straight up says he lies and is like, why should I do this?
Yeah.
Which I think, you know, a lot of kids that age can sympathize with that.
I think it's just one of those things where, that like at that age, that's when you start to realize it about your parents. I think it's just one of those things where, unfortunately, sometimes you have a parent who kind of sucks. So it's like compounded with that.
Right. Or even not, I don't think it would even, because I didn't identify with that a good bit myself. I didn't really have a particular, my parents weren't particularly stern. But just sort of the realization, like, they're just like people, you know. Even if they're not, like, bad parents, per se. Like, they're people, they make mistakes, they're hypocrites, but, you know, we all are at different times. Which, in the way that was portrayed, I thought was just so, it was so well done.
Yeah. I could literally gush about this movie for days.
I will tell you now, like, I welled up a few times because it was just, it was so emotional. Like,
well, it really is. Like, you just have to, like, let go any pretense you have for a narrative.
That is a great way to put it, because, yeah, I'm a very much a narrative-driven, like, I love to read, I love books, and, like, I just love a good story, but, like, I just wasn't worried about that too much. Like, in broad strokes, yes, but that really wasn't on my mind for most of this movie, but it was still very effective on me.
Yeah.
I related to it, I believe they're Catholic. Like, I think the church they go to is a Catholic church. If they're not, it's very similar. But I grew up Catholic.
It has to be, right? Because doesn't he kneel at the edge of the pew?
He does. He does. And that was one of the signs. But I was like, I was wondering, like, is there another denomination that does something similar? But I'm not sure. Like, it was very Catholic to me.
I was raised Presbyterian, and I only ever saw that when I visited my cousin's Catholic church.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, I think we're correct in that. I looked that up to see if there's anything in particular that said something about it. Not that it matters, but I don't know. I was just curious. But, like, yeah, growing up, like, I went to Catholic school, you know, went to church every Sunday. And when he's sitting there in that pew and the priest is talking about the story of Job, like, from the beginning, that quote, about how just, you know, bad things happen to everyone, you know? And I just remember wrestling with that growing up. It's just like, you know, seeing people do bad things and get rewarded, and see people do good things and just terrible things happen to them. And, you know, you're kind of like, huh, this isn't like my Sunday school class, or this isn't like that story we were told in religion class or whatever. Like, it kind of shatters your whole worldview when you get to that point.
Yeah, completely. And then I liked how the movie works that into it, where, because obviously it can't help but conflate the right word, but like show the correlation between obviously the father that is God and then the father that is the father of the household.
Yes. And there's a few instances in the narration too where Jack he'll start out talking, like, it sounds like he's talking to God, like he's praying. But then by the end of it, he's, like, obviously talking about his father. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, he conflates those, like, within, like, the stream of consciousness thing in the narration, which that was the other thing I loved was the narration for that reason.
Oh, man. For me, this is, I don't know, man. I love the Badlands narration, too.
I do, too. Actually, I thought about it while I was watching it, because, yeah, they're different, very different. They do very different things, but Terrence Malick does that so well.
Oh.
Yeah, that is the through line for me, having only seen three of his movies so far.
Oh, trust me. I think the first five are such a cool, because I feel like Tree of Life is the epitome of what he, like, this is the kind of film he wants to make. And this is, like, he's like, Tree of Life is him cracking the code on how to make it, how to arrange these images with these kind of like whispered poems with the swell of music. And he's like, cracked the code. And then the first four movies are watching him try to solve the puzzle.
Wow. That is crazy to think about, like, as like a creative person, you know, like finally doing that, like, you know, everyone is always out to make their masterpiece or whatever. And, like, because I think once again, I've only seen a handful of his movies now. But, like, this very much does seem like the thing he's always wanted to make. And, like, it's so hard to, like, if you're just writing, even, to just get that idea onto paper the way you want it. And then, and to do it the way he does it with film, like, I mean, that's amazing.
Oh. And then, like, it's just amazing too that, like, these, like, I flippantly call them, like, attempts to crack this code, that, like, some of these attempts are just stone-cold masterpieces.
Yeah, just sort of along the way, he's, you know, making a bad lands.
Yeah.
You know, still probably going, this isn't quite what I want.
Yeah.
You know, which is crazy to think about.
Oh, and then, so in preparation for this, I also rewatched The New World, you know what? Oh my god, I think The New World might actually have been my first Terrence Malick movie. Because I can almost swear that my mom rented The New World. And I think, like, I watched a bit of it with her, and she was like, yeah, I'm not enjoying this. And then,
How old would you have been? Do you remember?
I would have been, so it came out in 2005. So if she rented it when it came out, I would have been 14.
Still, I'm imagining myself at 14, and mm-hmm. I haven't seen that, of course, but I feel like at 14, if I had seen a Terrence Malick movie, I don't think I would have liked it. Did you like it? Like, did you get an inkling about it?
I'll be honest, I hate to say it, I don't think I liked it.
I mean, that's understandable. Yeah. Like, once again, like, at that age for me, it was like, oh, Tarantino is
the
coolest, you know? Which, I mean, I still love his movies, but was very much an entry point to a lot of things.
Yeah,
and Terrence Malick was not on that map, you know.
No, Terrence Malick is not on the tree for Tarantino. I am sure there is audio recording of Tarantino going, "Oh, what you don't understand is Terrence Malick is like the greatest living filmmaker of all time." Like, but you don't see that in Tarantino movie. I don't see that in Django Unchained. No, so I did rewatch The New World, and I watched the 3-hour extended cut of it, and it was a damn light. It was the easiest 5-star for me on Letterboxd.
Wow, okay.
Like, I thought it was incredible, and it was so, knowing, like, what The Thin Red Line is like, and knowing what Tree of Life is like, seeing The New World was, like, wild, seeing him finally, like, get closer and closer to perfecting it. And but the New World is actually pretty narrative, like, for him at that time. It's pretty narrative, like, you know, John Smith arrives, there's difficulty with the integrating the customs of the cultures.
Right. Yeah, already that's a million times more story-driven than Tree of Life.
Yeah.
not putting it down, but it's just like, wow.
And then, another thing was, like, in rewatching Tree of Life, it's just that it's mind-boggling how instinctual it feels. How, that for me, I don't, maybe I'm not watching the movie correctly. In the sense that, for me, the narration is almost just like, I don't really try to, like, think about the words of the narration.
Yes. No, I'm 100% with you on that. And I think this is very much a movie. Yeah. I'm definitely not one to think, you know, art in general doesn't have to be interpreted one way or another, but I feel like this movie in particular is like an invitation to do that, to like watch it and reflect and sort of superimpose your own experiences, mm-hmm. beliefs, moods, whatever on to everything. Cause there's so much room in there to do it. And that's one reason I think it's so effective is it walks that line so well.
100%. This is a movie that definitely invites interpretation, and it's one of those, like, rare movies that, like, is, like, it's saying to you, hey, I want you to think about me. I want you to, like, try and figure me out. And then whichever way you figure me out, there's somehow enough bones to support that.
Yeah, yes, that's definitely. Because, like, it's, like, there is just enough. Like, it's not a complete, you know, abstract art movie. Like, there is a narrative, you know, despite, you know, us joking about, you know, earlier that there's not a lot, but there is one there. And it's just like, I mean, it's literally, it's just the bones. That's exactly what you said. And you can sort of put anything you want on top of it. And yeah, with the narration, especially, I was thinking about it in terms of this movie versus like Badlands, for instance, just, you know, another movie, sort of meditative movie. Well, Badlands isn't super meditative. That's more of Days of Heaven. But either way, just how the narration was so different. Because, like, in this one, it's almost like the narration wasn't for the audience. Sort of what you were saying, like, not thinking too hard about the words. It was almost like this stream of consciousness thing. Like, we just happened to be able to hear someone either hear their inner thoughts or their prayers in a lot of instances. And like, it wasn't for our benefit as a viewer. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's like, it didn't break the fourth wall like narration normally does. You know what I mean? Like, that's a weird way to say it, but like,
no, I totally get that. It is an interesting way for it to, incorporate narration into the movie, is this way of, yeah, just like trying to, like, he's like figuring out this cheat code to cut right into the emotion.
Yes, yeah, and sort of just bypassing it in a way that, like, pretty much for like conventional movies or just most movies in general, we'll do that by way of like, here's the strong narrative, here's the goal, you know, here's the struggle. Da, da, da. But and like, there is some of that, but it's not. It doesn't feel as important as like just what everyone's feeling and going through, which it's amazing for someone to be able to make something that effective that way, you know?
How did you feel about, because I just want to ask, because having only seen Badlands and Days of Heaven, he almost never does it in Badlands. And in Days of Heaven, you can see him like, needing to experiment with this technique in terms of the camera movement. Because in Days of Heaven, he like kind of does these every now and then, like these fast push-ins. And if I remember in Badlands, he like doesn't do anything like that.
Yeah, I think Badlands was pretty conventional.
Yeah.
In that aspect, anyway. And sorry, I was cutting out a little bit. It was fast what now?
Oh, where Malik is doing these, like, in Days of Heaven, he does it just a little bit, but these, like, where the camera just does a super, kind of, like, fast push-in, where the cameraman is, like, running with the camera towards somebody.
Oh, okay, yeah. That, actually, I enjoyed that, but, see, this is why I like talking about this with you, because I have very little technical concept of stuff in movies, but I noticed, especially in the beginning, and maybe especially in the parts in the beginning where it was focusing on Jack grown up, there was just a ton of movement always. It was either the camera was moving very quickly, like you just described, or everyone in the scene was moving very quickly, or both. You know, it was always one or the other or both, which... It felt very, because, at the beginning, there's so much emotion, and, like, it felt like that was a good way to express that, was with that camera movement. So I found it very effective, and I really enjoyed it.
Okay, good. Because, you can see, like, there's, like, maybe a handful of shots in Days of Heaven where he does it. I think there was a scene where, like, Richard Gere is in, he and his sister, or not his fake sister, but he and his girlfriend are in the river talking about, like, what are we going to stay? What are we going to do? Like, do you want to, like, kind of, like, keep up the charade so, like, we'll stay here past the work season? And, and I remember distinctly there was a moment where, like, the camera does this fast push-in, and I was like, oh snap, that's, like, straight from Tree of Life. And so
you'll have to go back and watch that. That's really interesting.
Yeah. So like, and if I remember right, it happens just a handful of times, just like maybe 2 to 4 times in Days of Heaven. And it edits weird too in the movie. Cause like, I feel like in Tree of Life, every cut just works for me.
100%. I saw something that was, this was just a comment I saw on something after I watched the movie. Someone said you could pause this movie at any point and like hang it on your wall.
Oh,
and like you could, like it's so meticulous and, what's the word I'm looking for? Intentional, mm-hmm. You know?
Oh, but isn't that wild when you think about how it was made, where there's just piles and piles and piles of footage of different things going on. Cause like,
yeah, exactly.
For every shot where the boys are playing and stuff, there's shots where they're playing in a different field.
And yeah.
It feels so intentional. And then at the same time, knowing that it was made purely like instinctually. That.
Yeah. Cause it was very, everything about it was very stream of consciousness, from the images to the narration, mm-hmm. to just the how the scenes were arranged. Yeah, that's interesting that he could do both of those things at once, you know.
It's incredible. Like, especially when you just to tie this back to like Sean Penn, talking about like what he saw the screenplay as versus what the finished product was. So it has to be drastically different. So like, I have to imagine that during production, it's just a whole lot of, he's like, well, today I've got Jessica Chastain, I've got Brad Pitt, you know, and I've got one of the kids, and you know, it's like, let's just, I know we have this plan, but I changed my mind. Let's do this instead.
Gosh, I wonder how that experience was for some of the crew. Like, I wonder how that looked. Like, could they imagine this, like, actually being something where they're like, oh, we just watched a woman hide behind a drape,
yeah,
10 times. You know? Like, which it's, and I'll say that, but, like, I loved those shots in the movie because they felt, oh, there's, like, a childhood innocence to them. But, yeah, if you're a camera operator doing that 50 times in a day, it's probably like, what the hell is this man doing?
Well, it's kind of like, because of the, using Jack Fist as the production designer, I know that he's talked about his work with Terrence Malick, where he will, in the later movies, so like, especially The New World and Tree of Life, where like, in The New World, they built the, is it Jamesville or Jamestown?
Is it Jamestown? Yeah.
Yeah. They built a Jamestown. And they built it,
dang,
like nearly, I think like 80 to 90% the way they would have built it back then.
That is wild.
It was a fully explorable Jamestown. So it was like, there was nowhere in Jamestown that you could like point a camera and it would not feel like it did back then.
Man, that's an amazing, like going back to like imagining being a crew member on that, like, you would feel freaking immersed in that, just walking around on your breaks or whatever.
Yeah, so, like, other than the occasional, like, lighting guy wearing a Green Bay Packers jersey. But, like, when they're not around, yeah, like, I think for, like, the camera operators and actors, that's gotta be such a unique experience to be able to be, like, yeah, like, we've done this take of Jessica Chastain hiding behind a drape, but I know I could literally just do a 180 and like, if I wanted to, I could just film her from behind and like, or film her from this angle instead, because no part of the house isn't ready to be filmed.
Dang, that is, yeah, that is a great like spin on that, because I really did love the house and the setting. Like, it all felt so real.
Yeah.
You know,
it's incredible the work that went into that movie. Quick question. Is this
yes
Brad Pitt's best performance?
think it's got to be up there. I don't know. I really do love, like, Seven, though, like, to be honest. Like, but I sort of on that, do you think that's his? What do you think? Where would you put it?
Dude.
You've probably seen a lot more of his work than I have.
I know this is a hot take. And I know this movie, like, for some reason, in this director's filmography, this movie is always, like, viewed as in the bottom tier for some reason. But I fucking love it. And I'm going to throw out Curious Taste of Benjamin Button.
I could see that, though. That is kind of interesting, the reaction that that movie got, like, sort of over time. You know? Like,
I think people, like, it, for me, yeah, it does have, like, this weird, like, veneer of, like, Oscar-bait.
Yeah. Well, and it kind of became a meme, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah, everybody was making fun of, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, if anything was small and wrinkly, it was like, oh, dang, that's a Benjamin Button, baby.
Yeah. Yeah, me when I'm Benjamin Button, LOL. And, like, yeah, it's just, yeah. It almost became a joke. So, like, yeah.
That's so sad because
but if you do take that away, I mean, that is a cool movie.
I think that movie and Brad Pitt is incredible.
I'll say, I thought Jessica Chastain did an immaculate job.
Oh,
speaking
yeah.
of just like how the acting went, like, especially in the beginning, you know, right after they find out the other son has died,
yeah.
like her emotional range in that, like, you know, there's that shot where she's kind of pacing around in the street,
mm-hmm.
You know, and Brad Pitt kind of coming up, showing up behind her every now and then. And she looked like she wanted to just like melt into the world and just disappear forever.
And like
that's the part that really got me. She did an excellent job. Her expression of grief in that was amazing.
I've seen the movie many times. Like, I think Tree of Life I've now seen 5 times.
And dang, nice.
I swear. Well, 2 of them was a long time ago in theaters. But I swear, every time Fiona Shaw, who I think plays Brad Pitt's mom, she seems to be playing a relative of the family.
Oh, but yeah. Oh,
every
gosh.
Time in that beginning sequence when Fiona Shaw is like, well, life goes on, and you're like, okay, well, that's a good way to end that conversation. And then there's like a beat, and then she goes, at least you have the other two.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that was like,
oh my
that God. Was almost a laugh out loud like scene in the sense that like people say stuff like that, you know,
they
and it's
do.
Just like,
and then
oh
the fact that
gosh.
The camera just holds on Jessica Chastain as she's hearing this, and then it just
you, it's like you can hear her gritting her teeth,
yeah,
you know, like and that was another part that I found just super impactful as far as like creating like a deep emotional experience was the sort of the mourning period, especially with its concentration on Jessica Chastain, the mother. It hurt. So, and at that point you had just met these people, like mm-hmm. the movie had just started and it already seemed so deep and hurtful and sad, you know, 'cause it was so real.
Yeah. And then I really think like someone with enough time and patience, not me, but someone could really do a beautiful deconstruction of how the movie bounces from kind of idea to idea, because I love the way it bounces.
Oh, sort of like map it out a little bit.
Yeah. Like it's incredible the way it bounces from the parents when they're older in the 60s. Grieving, and then it bounces to the anniversary, or my interpretation was the anniversary of.
Yeah, because he says something about on the phone when he's talking to his dad, like, oh, you know, this day or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay, so that's what's going on.
And then, yeah, so it bounces forward to Sean Penn also grieving and still not being to terms with it. I didn't catch him on the phone saying something about this day. For me, it's when the girlfriend is laying the kind of like flowers on the table and he lights the candle.
Oh, I didn't make that connection either. I just thought that was like some ambiance, but that makes perfect sense.
Dude, that's the beauty about this movie is that nothing is explained, and it's...
Yeah. Well, so we both noticed two different things and came to the same conclusion. Like, two very small things. Like, it's sort of like you're talking about with the building of a set that's just entirely Jamestown. Like, he's, like, doing that for us, too, with the shots. Like, everywhere you look, it's just, like, you're in the middle of the story, mourning with his family, and then with them as their, you know, just life goes on for a while.
Yeah. Nah, it's just, I just really think that, I think you could ask, you could ask, 10 different writers to write, an essay or a book on this movie, and it would just be 10 completely different, takes of,
Oh, 100%.
What it means,
the ending, of course, I remember sitting there thinking, I was sort of what am I supposed to be? I kind of got what was going on an emotional level, but I was just what am I supposed to be getting from this? And then I kind of stopped worrying about that because I was that's not how to watch. I know we said, there's no wrong way to watch a movie, but I was that's not how I'm going to watch this, ending. I think that scene alone, you could get, you could get anything for probably sort of a rapture thing kind of maybe.
Are you talking about everybody being on the salt lakes?
Yeah, everyone out on that beach, mm-hmm. and just kind of wandering around. It shows Sean Penn as a child, he's even just kind of playing and jumping around. I don't know.
Then isn't there that
so much depth? Yeah, he walks through that doorway sitting in the sand. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wait, real quick, can we talk? Okay, so real quick before we wrap this up, how wild is it that there is a underwater sequence where so Jack is the eldest kid, and you see Jack's bedroom, and it's all underwater.
I forgot about that.
Isn't that wild? And then Jack swims up out of the doorway into the light, only to be birthed.
I'm not. This movie took me on such a journey because that happens towards the beginning, doesn't it?
Yeah, because it.
Yeah,
if I remember, it happens. This major sequences of the film are their grief and the setup of the characters, and then it cuts to the beginning of the universe. There's a couple bad CGI dinosaurs.
Yeah,
and then there's you see a little bit of the parents' romance, and then and then you see Jack swimming out of his underwater bedroom.
Yeah, like a primordial organism, coming up out of the ocean to walk on the land. I forgot all about that, man. That was a beautiful scene too.
No, we never even touched that stuff. So how I have to ask. Because it's so weird for me to think about the movie for the first time, in that sense. Having seen these, kind of cosmic sequences. And I've seen these cosmic sequences many times. And I know, when to expect them. And that they're kind of, 20, 30 minutes long. And that once they're done, we're going back to Texas and we'll be there for a while. What was it like being in the middle of that?
So I felt like he did a great, especially with the first set that's showing the creation of the universe or the world. I felt like I was so emotionally frothed up already. And then it's cut into, there's some volcano stuff in there. And all this sort of, it's almost like violence that's just creating. And I thought it fit perfectly. And it was just, I thought that part. I will say, though, because you already brought it up, when it did get to the CGI dinosaurs, kind of okay. I didn't hold it against my takeaways from the movie, but I was I see what he's doing there, and I don't know about this. You know what I mean? I get it. It makes, thematically, it makes perfect sense But just the presentation, I was a little taken out of my state of mind by that one. But other than that, all the other stuff, like just all these elements clashing and lights and fire, and I thought it was beautiful.
Mm-hmm. I'm always flabbergasted every time I see that. I do. Someone much smarter than me pointed out that the dinosaur sequence is to, or at least that their interpretation, because he's never going to come out and say it, but that his interpretation of that sequence was that it was the, because a big theme of the movie is grace versus nature.
Yes.
In that.
Which I loved. I loved that theme.
Yeah, it's so wild because you never really, I've never really seen people or seen someone talk about those two things in both opposition or in, not cohorts, but
yeah, because it's always like nature versus nurture.
Yeah.
You know, instead of grace versus nature or something like that. Yeah. Like, yeah, I didn't really know what that meant at first when she was saying it. And then, of course, she explains it. And so, like, oh, okay, that may. And then in just the movie is just, the rest of the movie is just, you know, just, it expounds on that repeatedly, mm-hmm. but in really subtle ways.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, but yeah. No, I loved that so much.
And that's supposedly the dinosaur deciding not to crush the other dinosaur's head is supposed to represent the very first instance of grace.
Really? That is interesting.
So I was like, when someone told me that, I was like, oh, wow, that's like, I was like, well, you have to have a dinosaur sequence now. It has to stay.
Yeah, exactly. You can't like, take it out. And I had sort of a different take on it, but mm-hmm. I thought it was, but I love that though. But it was with that theme. Like I saw it as, okay, so dinosaurs, you know, out there like that, like that's pure nature. You know, it's mm-hmm. eat, hide, kill, pure, just primal instinct. But then in that moment, grace comes in and he's so, you know, it's rubbing its foot on the injured dinosaur's face.
Mm-hmm.
It's this very intentional seeming act. And so, I don't know, to me, it sort of came off as like sort of a yin and yang thing. Like they're not like they are sort of maybe opposing forces or opposing just ways to take on life. But they're also like there's a little bit of the other always mixed into the other one. Like there's a little grace in nature and a little nature in grace.
Yes. And I like that too, because you could even view it in terms of the reading where the dinosaur that displays grace. I'm no paleontologist, but it sure did look like a predator.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We'd have to get like my like 5-year-old nephew to, define that dinosaur for us. My dinosaur is a little rusty.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, it looked like it was on the prowl and it, you know, found the injured weakling and it was about to be dinner time, mm-hmm. you know, but.
So then that, the idea that like, you know, the cliche, we all contain multitudes.
Yes, exactly. And I think that's even brought up in the narration. Jack says, "Father, mother, always you wrestle inside me, always you will." And it's like, bam, that's it right there, man. Like,
man, is that the skeleton key for the movie?
It might be, now that you put it like that. Because that comes right before his father, like, sort of apologizes to him. Like, not like a real big, of course, you know, it's not a real big heartfelt apology, but it's like, there's a little bit of it there. And you can tell he genuinely feels bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and whether that's just because all of a sudden, you know, business wasn't going so hot and he didn't feel like a big shot anymore or something, or whether he was genuinely reflecting on life. You know, it's hard to say. That's another moment where you'd have to project your own. Though I think the fact that the son is still talking to him when he's much older, maybe, you know, maybe there was some good healing there, you know?
Yeah. I mean, they are still communicating. So like, I mean, not to belittle the experiences that young Jack had, but like it can't be all bad. Like,
Exactly, yeah.
So I think that's a good spot to wrap it up. But yeah, so I don't know about you, but this is a 5-star movie for me. Like,
dude, I loved it. And I'm not, this is not the kind of thing I'm normally super into.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I don't know if I was just in a, I mean, I don't want to reduce it to that, but like, I don't know. Like, I've been watching a lot of trauma movies lately, if that tells you anything. Like Toxic Avenger 1-3.
Whoa.
Stuff like that.
This is a wild departure.
Yes, it was such a swing away from that. And I felt like I kind of needed it. Like, mm-hmm. I felt like it did something for me.
Well, I'm so glad you enjoyed Tree of Life.
Dude, thanks for the recommendation. Like, yeah, that was amazing.
It's my pleasure. The more people I can put on the Terry Ilm as a, you know, he and I are best friends.
Little Terry.